You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is up, everybody? Welcome in to this Tuesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. Today, we got a game. We got a randomly big game against the horrible, horrible New York Knicks. They are last in the standings by a crazy amount at this point. I want to say it's like two or three games. They're the only team with a winning percentage under 20%. That's brutal. Under 20%, that's like almost mean to your fans. They're going to win less than 20 games. It's awful. But somehow, must win for the Pacers. I mean, got to get back on track tonight. We'll talk about that. I want to talk about Doug McDermott, because we haven't talked about Doug McDermott on the show or in like the narrative of the team in a while. And then I want to talk about something I'm working on. It'll be a short segment at the end, so it'll be cool. I don't want to spoil it too much. It's going to be cool. But let's start with the Knicks, because that's the pertinent stuff for tonight. The Knicks suck. For those of you who listened to the weekly show yesterday, you know that the Knicks are horrible, and me and Adam started talking about the Knicks for about 2 seconds, and then immediately flew off the rails and started talking about something else. They did lose the game the day we were recording. They played the night game. Somehow they got the night game against Minnesota. It was terrible. They scored 92 points. So their starting lineup in that game was Dennis Smith, Kevin Knox, Damian Dotson, Noah Vonleh, DeAndre Jordan. And DeAndre only played 15 minutes in that game, and he didn't have foul trouble. Mitchell Robinson playing way more minutes for them at the five. So not even really their starting lineup. Alonzo Trier played almost as many minutes as three of their starters. Only Damian Dotson played heavy minutes for this team at this point in time. For those of you that don't know about who Damian Dotson is, that is indicative of the Knicks right now, that Damian Dotson is their guy with the big minutes. He took their most shots and scored their most points. He had 26 in this game. Again, a guy named Damian Dotson, who a lot of you listening do not know who he is. By the way, pretty good player. He went to Houston in college. Pretty good. Houston's killing it this year. I think they're going to be a good team in the NCAA tournament. Anyway. The Knicks don't have a lot of ways to generate offense, and that's kind of not their fault, or not their coach's fault. Like, their scheme is fine, I guess. Like, they have players who can do stuff off the dribble, like Moutier and Dennis Smith and kind of Kevin Knox. You know, they can do some stuff, just not efficiently, which is a big caveat with young guys. You know, they can kind of create their own shots and make the defense break down just a tiny bit, but not enough to actually, like, threaten you and scare you. And the other thing is with the younger guys, that isn't so much the case with veterans, as they turn it over a bunch because they're young and inexperienced. Dennis Smith and Moutier combined for 10 turnovers in that Minnesota game that I'm talking about. So expect heavy turnovers from the Knicks. I want to know what they are in the league in turnovers while talking about it. They are 10th, actually. That's not that bad. They are 10th, but that also includes pre-trade deadline when they had more veterans on their team, like Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr. But now, a little younger, playing younger guys, coughing it up more. So that they're not scary when they break you down off the dribble, and that's like the only way for a team like this to generate a ton of points is just hope they can get your defense scrambling a ton and score. And then DeAndre has been worse than Mitchell Robinson for them. I mean, Mitchell Robinson's going to be awesome someday, by the way. He is very, very good. And he's like Miles Turner on defense. He's at that like rookie year Miles Turner level of defense. So you know, he'll foul a lot and be out of position like every young guy, but he'll also be in position a lot and be really hard to score on. He had 5 blocks in this Minnesota game. Just be on the lookout for him around the basket. It's not easy to drive on him. They don't have Cantor anymore to kill the Pacers on the glass. DeAndre's not going to play much, so rebounding not a huge issue as it has been against the Knicks historically. If they're not breaking down off the D and they're not get off the dribble and they're not getting a ton of offensive rebounds, there's just no feasible way for me to see them getting like so much offense to actually win the game. In their current losing streak, they scored 92 in their last game, 94 the game before that, 96 the game before that. So their last 3 games, they've been under 100 points. Some of you will hear that and say they're due, which if they're due, they're due. But that to me is very indicative of their current rotation as they fire up the tank and hope they get Zion, and B, the actual talent of their roster is not very high. So they're going to be going all in to play these younger guys and not actively try to lose. They're just building for the future. It is what it is. On the other side of the token, Taj Gibson had 25 points. Okay, Taj Gibson's a fine NBA player. He's pretty good. I think that speaks a lot to their rostered players' inability to defend post-up and guys around the basket. Vonley's been pretty good this year, but he was much better earlier in the year than he has been recently. DeAndre is not even close to the defender he used to be, and Mitchell Robinson, like many young guys, is not good at defending like post-up actions, if that makes sense. Like here's another guy, like Embiid, to draw a random example. Like, Embiid is really good at defending what he's seen his whole life, like in college basketball and a little bit before that. He was really good at defending those things, but like Al Jefferson would score so much on Embiid because Embiid's like, well, crap. You know, they don't teach defending post-ups as much as they used to in younger basketball. The same thing will apply to Mitchell Robinson, who's a good defender but will struggle with that kind of stuff. So anyway, all this stuff about Taj Gibson to say, Thad could have a great game. They don't have a guy to contain a Thad Young type. Necessarily, which is huge for the Pacers. The other guy who went off, I'll put air quotes there. They got 13 out of Tyus Jones and 20 out of Jeff Teague. So the point guards and Derrick Rose only played 8 minutes and had 4 points. I think he was banged up recently. I don't know why he has fallen so far in their rotation. Anyway, getting 37 points out of the point guard position is great. Dennis Smith and Trier and Moutier and Knox, you know, all these guys are young, inexperienced, not good defenders. So Wesley Matthews, if Tyreek plays, he actually could have a very good chance of getting on track in this game. But like Wesley Matthews, DC Kojo, if Holiday ends up playing, someone is going to be feasting on a terrible defender. Basically, there's a lot of holes in the Knicks for the Pacers to easily exploit for points. Meanwhile, on the other end, the Knicks don't have a lot of ways to generate good points. So even if, without focusing too much on the Pacers and their actual personnel that matches up very well with this team, they just have a lot of ways to lose, the Knicks do. So I'm not worried at all. And the Pacers know they need to win. I mean, the team is finally actively admitting that their schedule is harder. They're all very clearly frustrated with themselves. Like, that second half against Philly was an absolute albatross of awful everything. So I'm confident that they, like the Bulls, you know, that the thing was come out and punch them in the mouth. They did. And then they let off the gas and the Bulls came back and then they punched them again and they won. I think that's kind of what's going to happen in this one. They're going to come out and be like, yeah, we're better than them and kick their butts for the first 24 minutes and then probably suck in the third quarter and then win in the fourth. Typical Pacers fashion, as they usually do. So that's my official prediction for the game, which for those who listen every day, is always wrong. Why do I make predictions? Like, does anyone place any weight on the prediction I have for a game at this point? Because I like to think, you know, I try to watch one non-Pacers game every day to keep up with other teams. But I like to think I have a decent pulse on the league. But then I always get this stuff wrong. So, like, what am I really doing here? So I don't know if anyone deserves to have weight in my opinion. But that's what I think is going to happen. And I hope it does happen because the Pacers need to get back on track. Speaking of get back on track, a player who got back on track after the All-Star break, Doug McDermott. Let's take a break and then talk about him. So remember Bean Adams' ravenous fight about Doug McDermott. Good times. I stand by everything I said about McDermott. I don't know what the best cutoff date is here, so I'm going to use the one that benefits my points the most because I'm a jerk. Okay, good. So remember when McDermott got hurt for that hot little stretch right before the All-Star break? Since then, 52.2% three-point shooting, 54% from the field, 7.3 points per game, and the team is almost always a plus when he's on the court. They were minus in 4 of the games out of the 11 he's played since. In that span, and one was the Milwaukee game where they got killed. So I personally am very pleased with the way he's been playing recently. Not so much that he's like blowing me away or like doing something so crazy awesome that's like, yes, like Doug McDermott is evolving within the Pacers scheme. It's just like they signed McDermott to come off the bench and space the floor for these guys. And when he's not making his threes, it's just like, okay, they're going to guard him to start the possession. But then, you know, he starts shooting less. And then the team, you know, doesn't rely on him as much. And they don't give him the ball as often. It's just like human nature at that point. Like, for example, from January 1st to, I can't use basketball reference apparently. From January 1st the month of January, basically, before his injury, he was chucking up 2.6 threes a game, and that number's gone up in this stretch where he's hitting more. It's just like, it's all like a rhythm and trust and confidence, and it's all just culminating together with him finally putting the ball in the basket. Shot 50% or better each of the last six games, and seven of the last eight. It's about time. I defend the guy because his spacing is so valuable, and like, at the start of possessions, when he flies around who's your what screens and cuts through the lane, like, people panic because it's like O'Quinn can find him in any sort of sized crevice, and you know, his screen, when he screens away off ball, like, people freak out and fly up to get to McDermott. But it wasn't really mattering for that January stretch where I just announced his attempts and didn't even say his percentage, where he only made a third of his threes. Like, that's not going to cut it. And that's not enough for a guy you signed just to make those threes. Now that he's making them, you're starting, it's coming back to everybody. Like, okay, this is what this guy actually provides for this team when they get him the ball. And like Utah was a team that didn't sell out to guard him. If you remember that game where they just completely just destroyed the Jazz in Utah way back in November, they were like, all right, like, it's Doug McDermott. Like, he's not going to kill us, right? Let's sag off and slow down the Sabonis Tyreek stuff and figure out what we can do. And then McDermott had 21 points. And then at Phoenix, kind of a similar story. So we know what happens when teams do really lay off of him. But at the same time, you know, the more he makes, the more tightly he's guarded, the more his teammates trust him, the more the defense is threatened by him. All of these things happening at the same time is so big for the team, and mostly McDermott to me, because we talked about yesterday, Aaron Holiday coming into play for Tyreek. That is because Tyreek has been terrible for a decent number of stretch, and his stretch is basically the whole season. He like randomly will drop off like a 19-point game once every five games. McDermott didn't have the breathing down his neck because of his position, but like, they play Tyreek at the three sometimes when they go two guard lineup now with Vic out. So it's like, there was a way in which it made some sense if he kept struggling. You know, if you had two terrible months of Doug McDermott where you go with Holiday, Tyreek, and Kojo as your second unit backcourt. And now I think McDermott has shown he's clearly more effective than Tyreek, both in that he is a wing-sized player and that he can stretch the floor and actually help out the second unit by supplying spacing. So he's cemented at least that he will be the ninth man no matter what happens with, like, developing rookies and all that. And I like that McDermott can play the four when they go small with Thad, which they had to do when Sabonis was hurt. And Sabonis is back now, so that's less important. But during this stretch of play that's in question, not even in question, the opposite of in question, he played very well. You know, the fact that they had another weapon to kind of throw at the four was convenient. And I ultimately think long-term he'd be better suited to play the four. They just don't have the perfect personnel to do that, and they probably won't ever, as Leaf will never, you know, step up into a starter role and open up a backup four spot on this team. But I just think it's big for him and the team. Obviously, making shots is very good, but, like, just to show, like, look, it's not just, like, flashes in the pan. It's like, okay, here's a consistent stretch of games where I am doing what I was signed to do and helping the team. That sets big time. And now I think the next step for McDermott, either next year or in the playoffs or whatever, is can some level of consistency, because it's very frustrating to see him go a month shooting 33% versus now from, it is a month actually, February 11th through this Philly game, shooting 50-something%. Like, that's fine. Like, that comes back to the philosophical debate that, I don't know if we've ever had this on the show, Mike Prada tweeted it. It's like, would you rather have a guy who every three games, he goes 0-for-6 twice and 6-for-6 once, or would rather have a guy who goes 2-for-6 every game? And, like, that's an ineffective shooting percentage. Like, maybe that's not a great example. But in the either-or situation, I would pick the 2-out-of-6 guy every game just because you know what you're getting. And, like, yeah, if you really want to be statistical loser, it's like, okay, if he makes his first shot, he's going to make all six, so that's the game. Anyway, but I'd pick the consistent guy where it's the same in real. I think that's easily the right answer, just to know what you're getting every game. And McDermott is showing now what he can bring every game, and I think that's a big deal. You know, he shot really well in the month of February too, and I think that was his best month of the year up to this point before this time. So good for him to finally be getting back on track. The Pacers need him in the second unit after two slumpy months for the, maybe it's the weather. Maybe McDermott gets better as it's warmer. You know, he also heats up because he was good in the fall, bad in the winter, good in the spring. That's my new theory. We're going to run with it. One more break here. And then I want to talk about something I'm working on, about Domantas Sabonis being a great screener. I know everybody knows it, but I still want to talk about it, so stick around. Hey guys, so for this ad break, you're actually getting me this time instead of someone else's voice, because my bookie is back to tell you guys about how great they are. And the timing is perfect because as a fellow gambler, the NCAA tournament is here. It is literally March is the most fun month for all this stuff. Zion Williamson and Duke in the tournament, I'm going to pick them to win it all. Virginia's going to get a one seed. You know, should we pick them past the 16 seed? Will Kentucky be good with that Harrow kid? I think he's pretty good. If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in all the action. They have something for everyone, even you, Mr. Multiple Bracket McGee, including me. That ad read is a shot at me, and I am mad. MyBookie's been in the business for years. They give you great customer service. They pay out real fast, like 2 days, less than 2 days, which is so nice. You can bet with the best. You can kick back and enjoy March Madness. You can win some money. It's great. Deposit with MyBookie. Use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, all one word, capital L, capital O, LOCKEDONNBA, for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code LOCKEDONNBA. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid, and March Madness is the perfect time for it. Why not try MyBookie? So this isn't like a secret or something new. That Sabonis, you know, we know is such a good screener. But to me, it's so many times this season this has happened, we finally realize what you're missing with a player when he doesn't play. You know, when Tyreek didn't play, he's a little different, but like, they're missing this burst on the second unit and a guy who can take off the dribble. When Vic's not playing, many things are missing, especially a good isolation clutch player when the game slows down. When Miles doesn't play, they're giving up an astronomical number of points per game. You know, there's like all these things that you just, when X player doesn't play, they're like, oh, crap, like I take that for granted. And for Domas, for me, it was a lot of things. But O'Quinn is a good, you know, we tout Sabonis' passing. It's better than O'Quinn's, but O'Quinn is good at passing. Like, I never felt like he couldn't do what Sabonis did with the second unit, just maybe like to a lesser degree, of course. But to me, the thing I saw without Sabonis was so much worse, screens. O'Quinn's big, and maybe it's just like a timing issue, but I feel like, you know, he either didn't make contact and then rolled at like an appropriate time, but then if you're not making contact, the guy just runs right past you and nothing really opens up. Or he would make contact, and then as soon as he made contact, he'd get all jittery and kind of like open himself up into the lane. And, you know, at that point, if you dive off right away, the guy can recover quickly, and that's not really helping. So he's not like an ineffective screener. You know, he does enough of the stuff that makes it work. Like, we obviously know how good O'Quinn is and the level of player he is, which is clearly the third center on this team. But like, Sabonis' screens are perfect almost every time. It's like he watches the ball handler, and the second they, you know, decide to go whatever direction they do, he gets him even with him, and then he rolls. So he's sealing off the guy long enough that either someone's going to have to switch or they're going to have to be drop coverage two-on-one situation. And he makes really good contact every time he sets a screen. You know, he sets both of his feet right into the guy. This is illegal. I love saying it anyway. He gets his elbows wide like Gortat. You know, the defender sometimes hooks him and he draws fouls that way. So they have to run around a bigger person. I'm glad the NBA doesn't call that, though, because screens are really hard to set against super athletic dudes. I appreciate centers getting every advantage they can, although moving screens, it is what it is. It's hard to call because they can just say they were cutting. Anyway, now that the play type profiles are back on NBA.com, finally, we can like actually dig into how good he is at all this stuff. And you can start with screen assist, which has been there all season. So Sabonis currently has 249 screen assists, leading to 553 points. That's amazing. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, love counting, 7, 8, 9th in the league. and every guy ahead of him has 400 or more minutes than him, except for Cody Zeller, who actually has fewer minutes than him and is also a fantastic screener. But that just shows, you know, how good of a screener he is that like he's only 6 behind Willie Cauley-Stein in 400 less minutes. He's 8 behind DeAndre Ayton in 500 less minutes. He's right on the nose of he's 20 behind LaMarcus Aldridge in 600 less minutes. Like, he's per minute or per possession or per whatever, he is better than all these guys at getting these screen assists and getting to these points because he's such a good screener and that opens up everything for everybody. And the points is really what's big. That 553, I think that's also ninth, actually drops him to 10th. DeAndre Jordan jumps ahead because apparently his screens were very good in Dallas. But again, less minutes than DeAndre by 400. So he's getting effective screens. They're setting up a lot of points. So clearly what we're seeing is a very good player here. Meanwhile, you have, I forget how this works. The play type profiles, you can look up specific role men and like how they do in these situations. Sabonis is getting 51.5% field goal percentage as the role man. The Pacers score 52.7% of the time when he's the role man. Like, he just does so much good stuff. Over a point per possession with him as the role man, which happens very, very often. Almost a third of the possessions he's in the game. So he is very good as a screener, and I think that was the most glaringly missed thing on the second unit with him out and Okwin in. And I'm glad he's back just to see those screens. It helped a lot in the Sixers game before everything just could not go in at all. So watch his screens next game. You'll learn something about how screens work and how like free-flowing basketball works outside of sets. It's very fun to watch. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll talk Knicks tomorrow. Maybe I'll have a guest to talk about the game. If not, I'll have a guest Thursday. Other than that, I don't have any other podcast announcements. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you Wednesday.